the school age, actually traveled with his mother, Belle Montrose. So Steve was literally born to the stage. He traveled in show business, and even though he traveled, however, he calls, even to this day, Chicago his home. He went to high school there, one Catholic school, also to Hirsch. I haven't been able to figure out how an Irish Catholic and a Greek Orthodox are kicking off a Danish Lutheran campaign. I simply don't understand. Well, anyway, when he got out of high school, he went on. He put in 1 year at Drake over in Des Moines, and then on to Arizona State, time out for World War II. He was in the infantry for a while, and after a tour of duty in the service, he returned to Phoenix and got his first job on the radio, KOY. He was there 3 years on the radio in Phoenix. Later on, the KNX station, the Mutual Outlet in Los Angeles, invited him to come there, and that show, Mutual Outlet in Los Angeles, became so successful that they started with 30 minutes, expanded it to an hour, and out of that show came the format which was eventually to develop into the Tonight Show. Steve would interview comedians and entertainers and celebrities of all different sorts, and the way I heard the story is this, that one day Doris Day did not show up. And so Steve had a 20-minute hole to fill, and therefore, with nothing else to do except ad-lib it or wing it, Steve took the microphone, went down into the lobby, into the audience, and began to interview the audience, and a whole new style of comedy erupted, and really the rest is history. That was the beginning of what today we know to be Steve Allen's greatest impact in TV. This led to a call to New York, which was then and now still the heart of television. He went to New York in 1950. NBC had a title, but not a show. They had a title called The Tonight Show, and Steve took it over, and then that show became a national institution. No doubt the most successful TV show of all time, The Tonight Show. Now, I could continue to speak some little time on Steve's TV career. It's very rich, it's very varied, but I'm not going to spend any more time on his TV career, because if I did that, I think I would be remiss in failing to emphasize his versatility. He is not only a TV performer, he has done other things and done them extraordinarily well. How many of you, for example, before you came here tonight, knew that Steve Allen is not only a very, very funny comedian, he's also a very, very serious author with only over 22 books to his credit. Some of them serious probings into the American social scene. For example, one of the problems in Southern California, and really in much of the Southern United States, is the whole problem of migratory labor. And Steve wrote a book entitled, The Ground is Our Table, discussing these migratory laborers. And that book sold over 25,000 copies. More recently, he came out with a book entitled Ripoff, The Corruption That Plagues America, another probing evaluation of our contemporary social scene. So he's not only a comedian, he's also an accomplished and gifted writer. He is also a songwriter, a musician, a composer. Did you know that Steve Allen has composed over 4,000 songs? And he's one of the most polished pianists you'd ever want to hear. Cannot read a note, but plays the piano well. Last night he just wowed the kids out there at Cal Lutheran by sitting down and playing. Did I say Cal Lutheran? Excuse me. Habits of a Lifetime, Die Hard. He just wowed the kids out at Dana College by by playing the piano. Let me, from there, I got another note here. He is also a producer and writer of TV shows. I think that program, how many of you have seen it, Meeting of Minds? Oh, well over half the audience, well over, the other half is all illiterate, but the half that, I think that this Meeting of Minds is one of the most extraordinary and potentially promising things that TV has ever done. To see all of these characters come to life from different periods of history and talk around the table about contemporary issues and yet speaking out of their own idiom, history becomes dramatically alive. I think my favorite was the one where you had Galileo and Darwin and Attila the Hun all sitting around this. Who was the female lead in that one? Do you remember?
Emily Dickinson.
One of the most extraordinary programs I've ever seen. One could continue with all of these different attributes of Steve Allen, a songwriter, a producer, a serious novelist. But I'd like to start to move toward a close of this windy introduction by emphasizing one other fact, that Steve Allen is an extraordinarily generous person as well. An extraordinarily generous person. At critical roles in their career, he played an important part by giving either primary exposure or very early exposure to some of the biggest names in the entertainment world. Did you know, for example, that names like I'm going to read you now were first introduced to the American public by Steve Allen? Jonathan Winters, the Smothers Brothers, Doc Severinsen, Steve Lawrence, Elvis Presley, Steve Martin, Andy Williams, the list goes on and on. Steve shared the publicity platform with those people. These are facts, 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 friends. But there is another side to this man, a warmly impressive human side. Did you know, for example, that in this day of collapsing morals and fading marriages, when it's 6 months together and then file for a divorce, that Steve Allen and Jane Meadows have been married for over 27 years, happily married together. I wish Jane Meadows could have been here tonight as well. A distinguished performer in her own right. Comes out of a family with solid Christian background. She is the daughter of Episcopalian missionaries to China. And the two of them have built a marriage together upon those foundation stones of Christian commitment. Because that's what Steve is. He's a committed Christian. For example, how many number one comedians have you ever seen on the cover of Guideposts, a conservative Christian magazine, in which he then goes on to give his own personal statements of why he believes the Christian way is the right way? Steve Allen is here tonight at our invitation. Let me say something else. He's here free. That's right. We told Steve that we were going to make a contribution to his expenses, and I gave him a check for his expenses, $55,000. I thought that was awfully high for expenses, but that was the bill he submitted. No. We gave him a small check to cover some part of his expenses, and just a moment ago, Steve gave me back the check, refusing to take it. That's one of the measures of this man. He's busy. He's extraordinarily busy. You don't find a creative, versatile mind like this, which is not just overwhelmed by requests and so forth. He had just finished, for example, 2 weeks at sea, doing a documentary which will eventually appear on TV on Queen Elizabeth II. And during the last few days of that, got very ill, and is just now recovering from that illness. And yet with all of those things, the pressures of work, and the fact of fatigue through illness, when he was invited to come, he not only agreed to come, but he also requested permission to come a day early so that he could perform out there on the campus for the Dana College kids who couldn't come here tonight. That's the kind of man we got with us tonight. Will you join me in giving a rousing Dana College welcome to Steve Allen? Thank you.
Sincerely appreciate it. Unfortunately, Jim's introduction took so long that I've already finished, ladies and gentlemen. So I'll just say it's been a delightful experience being with you. No, I there wouldn't be much point in my doing the kind of act I might do if we were, you know, seeing each other at a nightclub in Las Vegas or something of that sort, and you wouldn't be all that interested in jokes about high prices or the Hollywood freeway traffic anyway. So I've discovered over the years, in circumstances of this general sort, it's more interesting to audiences if I let them decide what will be the subject matter of such brief remarks as I may make. And therefore, we have passed out the question cards, as you know, to you, and we've gotten quite a few questions. Unfortunately, I will not have time to deal with all of them, but I'll hurry through as many as I can. And on the basis of the evidence in hand, some of you as individuals are fine, upstanding people, but some of you are a little strange, to tell you the truth. It's a very peculiar question. Now, I'm going to read your names as I read the question. Anybody want to buy his question back? The money will go into the fund, right? No, the reason I read your names is because, again, over the years, we've learned it's a little more fun if I say, you know, where is Mr. Jones or whatever, and you put a hand up or yell or whistle so we can communicate back and forth. But it does strike me that in a room this large, that might be inconvenient. And in any event, you are under no obligation to acknowledge your name or question, because I certainly do not wish to embarrass anyone. Humiliate, yes, I may get to that, but there will be a minimum of embarrassment. For example, just to show you how simple it is, this is from L.K. Mattson of Audubon, Iowa. Is that the same Dr. Mattson? No, another Mattson. Where is this gentleman from Audubon? Right there. He says, how did you become interested in Dana College? Who said I was interested? No, I am interested in it. And now, since you wrote that question, you know I learned the answer. Jim and I know each other, and I was very happy to jump in at his recommendation. Frank Van Steenhoven, Killingworth, Connecticut. Where are you, Frank? Over there? Ah. He says, what does Callis know about you that forced you to participate in this conference? Well, our secret's out, Jim. Stan Carlson of Des Moines. He says, what do you know about Jim Callis? You guys sitting together? That's funny. I know plenty about Jim Callis, and all of it is admirable. John Reagan, is that how you say your name, John? Blair? R-A-G-A-N. He says, why are you involved with a Christian college when there is so much to do? Oh, I'm doing it. But the two are not mutually exclusive, and I'm here for the same reasons all of you are. This is originally, the name was written Midge Jensen, and then for some reason or other, Midge scratched her name out. Where are you, Midge?
I was here and I didn't write it.
Oh, you didn't write it. You saw it and scratched your name out, right? Don't nobody leave the room. Question is, what key was it when the grand piano was dropped down the mine shaft? As it happens, the key was A flat minor. I will handle the jokes, Midge. You folks just ask the questions. Gary Ladman, is it, or Ladman? What's your last name, Gary? Ladman, thank you. Steve, could you please say hi to Gary, because it will impress my boss who is here tonight. Hi, Gary. And when you get to be a big shot, remember who gave you your start. I'll have Jim add your name to that list next time he introduces me somewhere. Elvis Presley and Gary Ladman. Irving R. Dana, I'll just take a chance that his name is Dana, Lincoln, Nebraska, says, what can a Dana do for Dana? Or better still, what can Dana do for a Dana? I say again, I will handle the jokes. Or do you have to give me a straight question? Because it is embarrassing to be doing comedy for 35 years and find that the audience is funnier than I am. But by the way, you folks over here, pardon my back. And you folks, pardon my front. Beverly Holmes of Blair. Steve, how long have you had your beard? About an inch and a half, Beverly. I know these are stupid answers, but the questions are not the greatest either. Richard Jorgensen. Blair. Does that name a figure of fun here? You, sir, at random, do you know the reason for the hilarity that went through the room at the mere mention of Mr. Jorgensen's name? You do not. That makes two of us. Do you know? Well, stop all that laughing. Steve, who is the most fascinating person you have encountered in your study? Oh, I see. He goes on to talk about meeting of minds and thank you, Mr. Jorgensen, complimentary turn. I don't really have a favorite. They're all those guests from history are on the program because they're... Their record is already established. They're not on simply because I find them fascinating, but because they are, and because of what they've done and said and written. I do, however, get a lot of wonderful suggestions and frequently useful suggestions from people as I travel around the country. I was in Dallas not long ago, and someone stood up. We were taking questions from the floor on that occasion, and he recommended that in our fifth season, which may soon get underway, that we have a panel of American presidents from the earliest days to modern times, and specifically he thought it would be good to have George Washington as a guest, and indeed it would, and then he recommended Richard Nixon be present at the same discussion, and at first some of the people chuckled, they thought it was a facetious suggestion, and I did too, but then I realized the man had a point, because I could have one of them say, famous line, of course, I cannot tell a lie, and the other one could say, let me give you a few tips. Thank you, Richard, for that. This is a very strange question. I have no idea how to answer it, but I'll just share it with you. Mrs. Walter G. Huber says, do you think there will be an invasion of rattlesnakes in eastern Nebraska? Excuse me, I'm from out of town. Is this an important local issue at the moment? It is. Where is it envisioned the rattlesnakes will come from? Wyoming rattlesnakes. The worst kind. I think we should all head for Iowa immediately. Thank you, Mrs. Huber, for alerting us to this, this timely issue. Mrs. Laverne, parenthesis Elaine, and parenthesis Becker. Don't see too many people with their names in parentheses, I know. It's from Russell, Kansas. Do you prefer, sir, doing personal appearances of this sort or television shows? Well, fortunately, Laverne, or Mrs. Becker, there's no need to make a choice. I enjoy both of them, and all of us who work in television do make it a point to get out from time to time and meet people face-to-face, only because it's a change of pace, and you don't have a lot of cameras and lights and that sort of thing blocking you from the folks who are enjoying whatever you're doing. I was out in front of the Holiday Inn. That's where I'm staying. Out in front of the Holiday Inn. Earlier this afternoon, after I was driven back from the school, And an elderly woman was coming through the glass doors as I was going out, and she suddenly turned around and began to snap her fingers and point at me. Now, if you're in the public eye for whatever reason, as some of our guests at the head table know, you get a lot of that snapping and pointing, and it has a very specific meaning, and it's not the most flattering thing in the world either, because what it means is your face has immediately been recognized, but the name does not immediately come to mind. I don't know if it's Mikey's the beard or whatever, but she said, oh, you're Mr. Glad, we love you, you're, I started to tell her, she said, come on, you don't have to tell me your name, we've been watching you for years, you're, I said, Steve Allen. She said, no. These are the things that can happen to you, Elaine, in these personal appearances, but it does keep you on your toes. We've dealt with that. Another question about the beard. We've answered that. Milan or Milan? Oh, I guess it's Italian. Milan, known, or from Scotts Bluff, Nebraska. How do you say your last name, Milan? Nore, N-O-I-C-A, but it was Nun, N-O-N-E. Did I correctly pronounce your first name? Milan. Milan. Ciao. Interesting question. He says, how can a comedian be both a Christian with humble qualities and funny too? Well, as regards humility, I think I'm absolutely topped in humility. I admit to being very conceited about how humble I am. Just a strange dichotomy. No, there's no necessary contradiction, Milan, between entertaining and trying to adhere to a moral code. And humility is an admirable virtue, regardless of one's philosophical background. And any time I have difficulty feeling humble, I just check last week's ratings and I straighten up right away. Quite a simple matter there. Ken Anderson of CLU. What is CLU? It's a very famous organization, whatever it is. Well, maybe that's his last name. Just Clue. Could there be something else? Is your last name Anderson or Clue, Ken?
Huh.
I guess he's passed out cold in the men's room. Well, let's see what his question is. Mr. Allen, what do you foresee in the coming decade in the socio-economic political arena? Please be brief. Okay, Ken. It's as brief as I can be. Ramona Allwill of Irwin, Iowa, now Omaha, she said. I didn't know Irwin, Iowa was now Omaha. I mean, you don't see the papers for 3 days, all kinds of things happen. I always liked Omaha the way it was. She says, Steve, why do you have a beard? Because I stopped shaving. Well, you can laugh, sir, but you stop shaving and you'll have a beard too. You mark my words. Oh, this is the question that one of the fellows up there was talking about. Omer, I believe it was. Lynn Bussey, Bird City, Kansas. Do you have a special city here for the birds? I've seen one or two of your cities, and they are for the birds. I didn't know you had one all laid out for them. Audubon, Iowa, for example, is for the birds. But the question is odd. The question is based on an unwarranted assumption, I will suggest. The question is, quote, do you still have polled Hereford cattle? Yes. Don't know how anyone knew that. I polled them once a month. They continue to vote essentially Republican on most issues. But Mr. Nielsen, rest his soul, used to check with us every so often to augment his own findings. I have no idea what I'm talking about at the moment. In fact, when this question came in, I asked our esteemed visitors up there if anyone, since they come from at least partly rural communities, if they could tell me what a poll Hereford, or what poll Hereford cattle were, and it turned out that none of us up there know. Do you know, sir? You haven't known anything. You didn't know about rattlesnakes. You didn't know about... Why do I keep appealing to you for information? Anybody at this table know what a poll Hereford cattle is as distinguished from a non-poll Hereford cattle? It's a what without horns? Has no horns, I see. Neither does Montevani and his strings. Well, thank you for that information. So there's got to be more to it than that. Let's see. Are they born without horns? You're sure of that? Somebody behind you is going, no. Do you know how a polled Hereford... does polled mean dehorned? No? They do not develop horns. Is there any contrary opinion before the jury retires to render a verdict in this peculiar case? Let's see. Bertha Anderson of Elkhorn, Iowa, home of the Danish Windmill. Is that a local restaurant or a... In what sense, Bertha, is Elkhorn, Iowa, the home of the Danish Windmill?
Denmark and private Elkhorn and
Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you for sharing that information. I forgive me for having assumed it was a restaurant. I stand corrected, and I should. I'm wearing surgical hose. Let's see. Bertha's question is interesting. She says, would you consider a chair on the Dana Literary School? Yeah, if a desk and a table went with it, I might. The whole set, nothing goes by itself, but thank you. And let's see, Lloyd Wright. I've known several Lloyd Wrights in my time. Are you and Jane planning a television series soon? Well, we're still involved with the Meeting of Minds series, Lloyd, and I recently did 6 comedy specials for NBC, which have been rerun in recent months. I think they're going to be rerunning the Christmas show we did last Christmas. But like many people in television, we're always involved at the production, the early stages, with a number of projects, some of which get on the air and some of which don't. And one program you might be interested in hearing about, some of you old-timers, I see a number of you here this evening, will recall one of the more delightful shows of the 1950s, which they're talking about bringing back now. Remember You Asked for It with Art Baker? For those of you young people here, and I see some students and other young folks, Art Baker was a very important and popular master of ceremonies in the 1950s. He was a distinguished elderly gentleman. He had pure white hair and dark skin. He always looked to me like a negative. But anyway, a very fine gentleman. And he was the host of the show called You Asked for It. And people would write in and ask for weird things, and he would have it happen. And anyway, they're talking to me about a program that's a little like that, but mine is more of a murder, horror, monster, thriller show. It's called It Asked for You. A little bit like that. And let's see, what else we have here? Alice Lasker, is it? Or Lacker? Do you know how to say the name correctly? No, I'm talking. You keep out of this. Do you know, apparently you don't. You're with him. How do you say Alice's last name? Lacker, thank you so much. Mr. Allen, tell us the secret of your long, happy marriage. Well, thank you, Alice. I give Jane at least 80% of the credit for the fact that we've been together for so many years. But I think as many of you, particularly in the middle years, will be able to testify, having been married for quite some time yourselves, no doubt. Anything in life that is successful for you, either to a dazzling degree or just to a moderate degree, it never is just a result of accident or chance. You always have to make certain investments in whatever, as I say, is successful. And as regards Jane's and my good fortune in remaining together for so long, I suppose there are 3 factors which are dominant, obvious enough as they are. Number one, mutual love, that goes without saying. Number two, mutual respect, also you would expect to hear about that. And number 3, an abiding fear of the community property laws. Sometimes when number 1 and 2 are shaky, you can count on number 3 for a while until you get organized in the other way. But no, I'm just very fortunate to. Let's see. Frank Reisinger of Aliquippa, Pennsylvania says, where is your wife? I often wonder. No, Jane is, I'm probably the only comedian in the business who does not do jokes about his wife. And there's a reason, I'll explain why I don't. It's not a matter of principle, I'd be very happy to. But the other guys have the freedom to do that for the simple reason that you do not know their wives. And therefore, when they joke about their wives, they are not joking about their actual wives. They wouldn't do that any more than you do. Well, he probably would. But anyway, most gentlemen would not be so thoughtless as to joke about their actual wives. But if there's an imaginary wife, you can say she's too tall or too fat or too dumb or too whatever, and make up any silly joke, and it's all make-believe. But I cannot do that, as I say, because Jane is on Broadway, and she's on television, and she's in motion pictures, and she makes recordings, and she's famous in her own right, as Jim was saying. And she's beautiful, and she's talented, and she's brilliant, and all of that is swell, but there's nothing funny about that, because humor is mostly about bad news or things going wrong, and these are the things we joke about. So there's nothing, inherently silly about Jane. She's just marvelous, and that, as I say, is nice for me, but it's not funny. I don't mean to suggest she's literally perfect. There is no perfection in the physical universe. And if I had to make a complaint, I would say She does spend a little too much of my money on clothing. That's not the worst thing in the world to say, but it is the case. As a matter of fact, in our family, it is so extreme that I'll tell you, about 6 or 8 weeks ago, somebody stole her American Express credit card, and so far I have not reported it to the police. Because the thief is spending a lot less money than Jane was. So far, I'm about $400 ahead on the whole deal. So thank you, Frank, for that very nice question. Let's see what else we have here. Phyllis McManigal, I guess. Another nice question about Jane. The Dana Women's Club could use more cake bakers. Would Jane like to like to bake a cake for us? She probably would, whether you would like the cake. Don't ever tell Jane about any of these jokes, Jim. But no, Jane is a remarkable homemaker. Last night she made it home about 4 a.m. No, seriously, she is all those things I said. She's beautiful and glamorous and virtuous and pretty, all those great things, but she is not the world's champion of the kitchen. Who cares? You know, we can afford help and so forth. But she's interesting in the kitchen. She's creative. She is the only woman I ever knew who figured out how to burn Jell-O. How she did it, but she did it. And she has an interesting way of preparing roast beef. She puts a big, enormous roast and a little tiny roast in the oven at the same time. And when the small roast is burned, she knows the big one is ready. So anyway, that's it. So I don't think you'd want one of her cakes. But don't ever breathe a word of that. This is just signed Sherry and Jim. Glad they're back together again. Wherever they are. Do you and Jane have any pets? Yes, Sherry and Jim, we have a German Shepherd. Not a dog. Just a big, tall, young, blonde fellow. Looks remarkably like this young man. Would you stand up, this young man right there? Young man in the tent, just for one quick moment. You look very much like our German Shepherd. And that's a great compliment. Donna Wahl, I guess, W-A-H-L, German name, I assume. Do you and Jane have any children? Yes, we have 3 lovely children. And 2 ugly ones. That's just a formula joke. No, I have 4 sons. Let's see. That one I did answer. John and Elaine of Tulsa. What sign were you born under? Furnished rooms for rent, I think. I didn't think the Lutherans were interested in that kind of thing. Mary Jane Sneed, I believe. Oh, that's very nice. Thank you, Mary Jane. She says, I think, despite what my husband says, I think your beard makes you look Lincoln-esque. That's better than humor-esque, I guess. Thank you very much. A lot of interesting comments about my beard. I've discovered, seriously, this is no joke, people under 40 like my beard, and people, let's say, over 50 aren't all that thrilled with it. Jack and Maxine Zarrow. Originally Vernon, Texas. What advice do you have for newlyweds? Well, that relates to the, we got several questions about marriage and how Jane and I worked it out over the years. Such questions presume that we are sort of authorities or experts on the question. We are not. We are lucky survivors of what you all know is a difficult assignment in life, and we've been very fortunate. If I had to be specific, however, I would simply quote the old advice. It's not original with us, but it's very sound, especially to young people who maybe think that, you know, you get married and you live happily ever after. You do a lot, but it's not always the case. Sometimes there are difficult, inevitably there are difficult moments. So I would just say, never go to bed angry. That's very good advice. Jane and I were awake once for 3 months. But we never actually went to bed angry. Well, we're not going to have time for all of these. I think I've covered that subject. I'll just quickly race through these. We got to that also, too, I believe. Irene Schipper. I am an ardent fan, so forth and so on. Ah, in all the years of watching you, I have never seen you kiss a lady from your studio audience. Why is that? I don't know, Irene. I just, probably because I have had some of the worst-looking audiences. You know, you have to be a little selective who you kiss. You're just not going to go out there and kiss like a dummy. I think we've covered that subject. We're just about home stretch with these cards here. Mrs. Baumgarten. A lot of German names. How did you win the lovely Jane Meadows? Well, Mrs. Baumgarten, it was the darndest crap game you ever saw. We were really playing for high stakes that night. Andy Avanchak, originally in Cleveland. Why don't you run for president? Well, thank you, Andy, but I think we have enough comedians in Washington already. They do. Edward Hansen, originally of Minneapolis. Is it when it ends in E-N? No, not you. When a name like Anderson or Hansen ends in E-N, does that mean Danish is distinguished from Swedish? Thank you. Explain that to him, would you please? Incidentally, where is Mr. Hansen? Over there. If you, sir, are the same Edward Hansen who 27 years ago left your wife and baby in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, I've been instructed to tell you, Mr. Hansen, if you'll step out in the lobby, the baby will kick the hell out of you right now. There he goes. Ah, beautiful name. S-I-G-N-E. Signe, is that how you say that? Signe? Nielsen Betzinger. Of Matomedi, Minnesota. That must be an Indian name, right? Matsumedi. As an entertainer, sir, you are daily faced with stress. How do you deal with stress? What advice can you give us about stress? I find that sometimes a certain form of meditation involving chanting is very helpful, Ms. Betzinger. You take some phrase, a restful phrase, such as Matomedi, Minnesota. Say it softly 17 times, and next question. Incidentally, is there a Joyce Sutton, a Mrs. C.N. Sutton, over there? So pleased that you're with us tonight, Mrs. Sutton. If I may, I'm going to stop the nonsense for just a moment, Jim, and share with this audience the remarkable story of this woman. I certainly don't wish to embarrass her, but simply to compliment her. I only heard about her case today, and it's really incredible. The same kind of inspiring story that stimulates the emotions we heard about these wonderfully generous contributions. As I understand her case, Mrs. Sutton, about 2 years ago, began to notice in her immediate neighborhood the same sorts of problems that have troubled almost every American community in recent years. More family problems, more juvenile delinquency, more crime of various sorts, and more social dissolution. And Mrs. Sutton did not stand idly by and wait for others to act. She didn't wait for agencies of government or for private social agencies to take a hand, but she determined to do something personal and meaningful about these difficult problems. And again, as I am informed, working constantly for the past 2 years, contacting various people in the corporate sector and in labor and in the churches and the various social organizations, she has personally raised $214,000, and then Mrs. Sutton used that money to move to a better neighborhood. There aren't many like you, Mrs. Sutton. Joe, is it Kirchhoff? Would you pronounce it Kirchhoff? Kirchhoff? Kirchhoff, I guess, would be more German over there. What is your real feeling about commercials on television? Well, Jane and I do work in commercials. We have commercials on the air right now for Postal Instant Press, and we do commercials for the last 7 years, although they're not seen here because they're just in the western states, for a product called Mocha Mix. Some of you, I know Jim would know what Mocha Mix is. Personally, I wouldn't wash my hair with anything else, but it's a non-dairy creamer. We know this Nando has a dairy and she sells this stuff. It would be outright. But I remember 7 years ago first finding out personally that people were very skeptical, which I take it that Mr. Kirchhoff is, becoming more and more skeptical about commercials, and well, they might be, because some commercials are an insult to people's intelligence. For example, I got a letter one time from a guy that at the time I was doing commercials for Datsun automobiles, and he said, "I just read in a magazine that you're 6'3 and you weigh 200 pounds, and we know Datsun's a kind of a small car. What do you mean you drive a Datsun?" I explained to him that there was no problem. I have two of them. I drive to work. It works out. I mean, I escape to work, and it worked out perfectly. So anyway, he was suspicious. I think there's a lot of commercials that, again, as I say, are sort of an insult to your intelligence. One that I take exception to is the one where the young fellow looks right into the camera. I'm sure you've all seen it. It's for Mitchum deodorant, and the young man is bare to the waist. He's wearing pajama bottoms, and he's looking right into the camera, lying in bed, and he says, "I didn't use my deodorant today. I didn't use my deodorant yesterday, and I just might not use my deodorant tomorrow." You'll notice he's in bed alone. So some of these, as I say, are beneath respect. But I think that one of the strangest commercial accounts, simply because the product itself has a very strange name, are the commercials for no-nonsense pantyhose. I do not understand why, I have nothing against pantyhose, but I do not understand why they are named No Nonsense. I think it's a dumb name. Let me take a quick survey. Will those of you women, perhaps even some of you men, for all I know, those of you who are wearing any kind of pantyhose, I don't want to embarrass you personally, just as a group, would you applaud if you are wearing pantyhose? Must be a good. Now, of the group of women who applauded, those who were wearing pantyhose, well, those of you who are wearing a brand other than No Nonsense, would you now applaud, please? Now, I ask you a simple question. You are wearing pantyhose, but they are not No Nonsense, right? So, is any kind of nonsense going on under there? No? I didn't think so. And they should stop calling those other things No Nonsense, right? Doesn't make sense. Oh dear. We have several questions. This one from, is it Gisela? Is that how you say the German name? G-I-S-E-L-A, Gisela? All right. She's one of several who asked questions, various points of view about what you can do about getting more clean entertainment on television, about violence on television, and so forth. You know what this reminds me of? I was addressing an audience of retired women just a few years ago in La Jolla, California. It was a lovely retirement community. And most of the women were, I think, reasonably well-to-do, and they were very bright and constituted a fine audience that day. And I was doing the same thing, answering questions. And at one point, there was the question about violence on television. So I gave it as, you now know what I do, I just do nonsense answers to these questions. And in that case, it occurred to me to say this. I said, well, I agree with the, what I take to be the implication of this question. I think there is too much violence in television. And I would go so far as to say that any television actor, any director, any TV writer or producer who deliberately crams unnecessary sadistic violence into a television show ought to be taken out and beaten to a pulp. You just did the reasonable reaction. You laughed. Not hysterically, perhaps, but you laughed because it was a silly thing and I said it to be silly. I've never forgotten that because those women gave me a standing ovation on that answer. And that is scary. Because, first of all, by missing the point, they annoyed me anyway. And secondly, what they were doing by their cheers was suggesting that the problem to imaginary, the answer to the problem of imaginary violence is real violence. And that says something a little bit disturbing about our whole culture. There are also, as I said, were several questions about the vulgarity of television, and it is in films and the theater now. It's a dreadfully serious problem. One thing you can do is, you know, turn it off or stay home. That does help a little bit. You can also write letters of complaint. But it's absurd. I went to the theater recently, and can't even discuss in mixed company what one saw. kissing and fondling and nudity, and this was in the lobby. Just disgusting. Now, there's some questions about matters musical. Let's see, Peg Keenan of Omaha. Where are you, Peg? Up here somewhere. Little communicative power as the word might have had. And the third and perhaps most puzzling factor is that even in the foreign language, it is a markedly obscure word. So according to my thinking, there probably aren't 17 people in the whole country have any idea what these songs are about, but they become popular anyway. For example, years, it's called frenesy, and there are very few people who speak Spanish who have any idea what the word frenesy means. Then there was the big Italian hit of about 20 years ago. Folare. Very few Italians have any idea what the word volare means. There are many other instances which might be cited. Well, I'm not so much knocking these songs, I'm trying to get in on this good deal. And to do that, of course, I have to come up with the right title. Has to be in a foreign language, has to be an obscure word. It can't just be the word for, you know, bread or milk or something, which everybody knows. That wouldn't do it. So I have looked all over for the right obscure foreign word. I have looked on the back of old cans of Shinola, everywhere imaginable. There's some very strange words there if you ever want to check. And I just couldn't seem to find the right one. And then several weeks ago, Jane and I were flying from Chicago down to Miami, and the plane stopped at New Orleans for about half an hour. I got off to buy a magazine, and as I stood up, the stewardess came along and dropped this card. You can't read it from where you are, but I'll just tell you, it has the word ocupado on it. I'm sure you've all seen these cards that the stewardess has put down that say ocupado. This weird thing is that on all the airplanes in South America, these cards just say occupied. But anyway, I didn't care about the word of the card. I realized right away my search was over. There was the obscure word I had been looking for, and I've written this very romantic begin titled Ocupado. Her seat was ocupado when I got on the plane. I moved in with bravado and I do it again. She whispered no fumare in a voice so divine. Her seat was occupado, but so was mine. Thank you. I should have noticed this before, because it does get thirsty talking. That's just as on television or at home. They provided me with some very nice juice. I'll just stop and wet my whistle before I conclude here. Why do they do this in all the hotels all over the country? They take a perfectly clean glass and wrap it in this filthy paper. Just have a little straight orange juice here. What do you mean? It is just straight orange juice. You think just because I'm an entertainer there must be something else in it? No, it is. You don't believe? All right. I'll prove it to you. There you are. Would you just lean forward and accept that from me? Thank you very much. That'll be $3.95. Well, I'll join you in a drink of it. But I know why some of you are, even, you know, since I've raised the issue, I know why some of you may be a little suspicious. It is, as I say, only orange juice. But there is a correlation between entertaining, and particularly doing comedy, and drinking. Perhaps the funniest man who ever lived, W.C. Fields, had a serious drinking problem, but eventually, sad to say, did him in. My personal favorite in the category of show business drunks, at least he pretends to be, is Foster Brooks. Don't you think he's about the funniest of those guys? But the number one name that does come most readily to mind in the context of funny men and drinking is that of Dean Martin, because That's right. For at least 30 years, all of us in the business, including Dean himself, of course, have done endless jokes about his drinking. And one strange result of that is that many people assume that Dean Martin is an alcoholic. No, he is not. He does take a drink. I'm sure he's been intoxicated, as perhaps some of you gentlemen in the room have at one time or another. But he is by no means an alcoholic. He is a junkie. And worse than I can tell you about. Well, I'm a little bit confused. I never do the same show twice. Not that that's such a big deal. I should do it, I guess, but I never have. But I don't say anything disrespectful, certainly not to Dana, because I had a fine piano there last night. But this is a lousy piano. And what's the name of this place? The Holiday Inn. Well, the good piano's on a holiday, I guess. And I could play some dazzling notes written by Jerome Kern, but to tell you the truth, if you play on a lousy instrument, it sounds lousy. You may have noticed that nothing I played up to now has really dazzled you as far as the music of it all is concerned. I suppose I could play a boogie-woogie number, because boogie-woogie was... Boogie Woogie was created on rotten pianos like this in various establishments of low repute back in the 1920s, quite literally. I was explaining out at the college last night to the young people there, and I will repeat to some of you young folks, that this is actually the first form of rock music. Some young people, if they're 17, they may think that rock started about 12 years ago. It didn't. It started, as I say, in the 1920s. And this was quite literally the first form of it, and it is still going strong, the 8 to the bar, or boogie-woogie form of blues music will always, I suppose, be with us as long as there is American music. So I think I could play that, and if you all stamp your feet a little bit, that will help somewhat. But the serious sort of Roger Williams type numbers really wouldn't make sense on this instrument. In any event, I've also been up here long enough because we've heard a number of speeches, and it's been a long two-day session for some of you, so I won't impose on you any longer now except to play this this one brief number. And if any of you know the words and would like to get up and sing, there are none. Give a serious answer to some of the questions as to why I was here and what Jim had on me that made me come here and all that stuff. I'm here for exactly the same reasons that you are here. I frankly was on my way home from New York to Los Angeles anyway, so I didn't come by dog sled from the North Pole. I don't deserve any great credits for just having gotten here physically. In fact, it is my honor to participate. If you're in the public eye, you know, whether you're a football coach or an astronaut or an actor, or, you know, whatever you are, you get far more praise than you deserve This, I think, is not really that you deserve it, since I've already established that, at least abstractly, that is not the case. But I think there is a hunger for leaders, a hunger for heroes. And if the actual leaders and heroes are not up to that, we just fill in the cracks with our own dreams and desires and applaud and make medals and plaques. And I guess that serves some sort of a public function, too, because we all need to see individuals who are strong and who we imagine are better than we are at one thing or another. But those of us who show up one night, one banquet, or perhaps come back from time to time, we don't really deserve those plaques. Or if we do, then ask yourself how much more credit the people deserve who work not one night or not for one weekend, but 365 days a year, year after year. If any one of us in the public eye deserve any praise at all, you deserve over 300 times as much. So I'm here to tell you how much I admire and appreciate the important work you have undertaken. And I'm sure because of your dedication and your commitment, you will succeed at it. I'm very happy to have played a very small role in your large drama. Thank you.
Friends, we're coming to the close of what has been, for many of us, one of the most magnificent weekends of our lives. It began last night when Steve came out to the campus and entertained our young people out there. It continued this morning when the board met from 8:30 until 10:30 and wrestled with a prioritizing of our capital campaign goals. At 11 o'clock this morning, we then went into a meeting of some of the people who have volunteered to work as leaders in our drive. Then at 12:30, we had lunch up on the campus. Steve came out for that also and gave a few very stirring words, followed by even more stirring words by Wayne Weisenbuehler. Which end of the table is he? Over here, the newly elected bishop of the Central District of the American Lutheran Church. And then we went from there to 2:30 to a series of short talks by various members of the Dana constituency, the Dana family. And it was truly an afternoon where the individual parts summed up to a whole greater than any of those individual parts. We heard from a couple of students, Scott Grorud, Amy Nichols. We heard from a couple of faculty members, Norm Banson, Jim Olson. We heard from some friends of the college. A couple of them are Bob Schaff and Russ Moseman and Herb Knudsen. It's been a good day. And then this evening we came together and looked at the Dana difference. First time many of us have had an opportunity to see that. All of us have had an opportunity to see that. Followed up by a performance by Steve, which was entertaining. And then at the closing words, uplifting and encouraging. Thank you all for being part of this. Let's move to a close now. By asking Bishop Wayne to come and close us with a benediction and send us home with God's peace.
It's been a long day and a great one. We're going to offer it back to the one who gave it to us. Let's stand. O thou Christ, Lord of laughter and learning, hope of people and nations, fill us with gratitude for our gracious past and the women and men who have brought us to this day. Now we pray, send us on into your future with passion and perseverance, counting on one certainty, you will be with us. Now use us for your mission for Dana. The glory is yours. Thank you for letting it touch us. Now may the grace of Christ our Savior and the Father's boundless love with the Holy Spirit's blessing rest upon us from above. Thus may we abide in union with each other and the Lord and possess in sweet communion joys which earth cannot afford. Amen.